Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Happy Friday to everyone that's tuning in from Cosmic Dimensions, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes later, and those of you that are joining in the chat room right now, welcome, everyone. Ever wonder what it would be like to live as an immortal? What are the keys to living immortally? Well, part of it is one love, one life, one laughter, and fun. It's changing your beliefs. So we're going to be diving into that a little bit with our guest today on Awakenings, Ben Abba, backed by popular demand. It's a really, really wonderful dialogue and interview that we had with him, I guess last week actually, tapping into what he's learned by interviewing those that are living immortals. And it seems like a lot of it is happiness, less stress. So I'm definitely incorporating some of what we learned in that last conversation with Ben, including music. Music has a way of upshifting or changing things. So sometimes it is good to put on something that's a little bit happy, a little keeping you a little spry, right? So those of you that are joining us for the first time, you've tuned in or surfed into Awakenings. I'm your host and also, as I like to say, co-pilot, Michelle Mache. And Awakenings is a live internet talk radio program that focuses on grounding the spiritual process of awakening. We explore the challenges in this process of awakenings. You can find a lot of advice, information here, resources here via the Sacred Space of Empowerment Room, also known as a chat room. And also by calling in or emailing. You can email me at info@selfinlight.com. That's S-E-L-F-I-N-L-I-G-H-T. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, or suggested guests, topics, this is really about the local global community here at Awakening. So it's really the Awakenings is part of the converging flow, and it's really expanding not only in consciousness but numbers because of the listener participants, which are you. And we do listen. My assistant and I that work together on this, you know, we had a few emails to have Ben come back, and that we were just in the middle, just getting into the nitty-gritty of it all, and our time was up. So we said, of course, we'd love to have him back as well. Those of you also that have questions and would like to call in, you can call in at 347-539-5122. This call-in number can also be used just to listen to the show. If you just want to listen and don't have questions, that's fine as well. But if you do have questions and would like to call in, the number again, 347-539-5122. It helps me to see the switchboard if you press on your phone the number 1, and actually I'll get an alert on the switchboard and I'll know that you have a question. Because a lot of people actually, I get emails, don't pick up my numbers, this is my number, and they'll give me the number and say, I'm listening while I'm doing errands today, or I'm driving a long distance today, so I'm going to be listening to your program. And I just, excites me, I love it. It's like technology at its best. You know, we're international because it's internet, and you can listen by phone if you choose. Also, if you do have questions in the chat room, I love questions coming from all ways. You know, some people text me, email, or like I said, phone or chat. Just type in CAPS, and then I can kind of catch those questions a little more easily, a little more quickly. Well, love to hear from all of you what's going on in your life and how you are doing and how this process of transition, change, individual, and collective awakening is unfolding for you, so that I can keep abreast of all that's happening and gear the programming in that direction so that we're really serving your needs, your wants. People in the chat, if you want to tweet this out, that would be great, which, by the way to reach me on Twitter is by Awakening's tweet, and you can keep in contact that way. So, fascinating idea of the idea that we literally have been programmed for aging, and as well as illness, and we've been hearing that. We've had, you know, Dr. Bruce Lipton on, we're going to have Stephen Hawking on, Rupert Sheldrake. We've had various people on that have, Dr. Eric Pearl, that have said this over and over, and I'm sure many of you have not only read this, but even perhaps seen this in your own life, that once you start changing your beliefs, you do start living more vitally, more healthily. So even taking that a step further is it possible to either alleviate or completely perhaps ameliorate the aging process? What is causing that aging process? And we've talked to Ben Alba before in a previous program. He over and over said the beliefs by what he had in his interviews with the immortals. So we are going to be recapping today a little bit of what we talked about and dive in a little bit deeper about living life as an immortal and as well as remote viewing. I also want to say that Ben Alba is also a co-author with a book with Dr. Wayne Dyer titled Wake Up, Live the Life You Love, Wake Up Moments of Inspiration. He also will be releasing his book soon on his research about the supercentenarians that he has found and interviewed, and that book is titled Secrets of an Immortal, an Eyewitness Account of 2800 Years of History. You can also connect with Ben Alba at secretsofanimmortal.com. And welcome back to the program, Ben Alba. Welcome.
Thank you. It's, again, a great honor to be on your show. I was really looking forward to this show because we kind of left it hanging of some a couple of questions that we wanted to answer. And it's always a great honor just to be with like-minded people that wanted to extend and enrich in our own lives as I have chosen to do with mine. Would you like to start off today with just kind of summarizing or having me summarize the previous show a little bit? And then I did find the question we were going to talk about, but I thought maybe I'd get the summary out first and then dive into that question.
Yeah, that would be great because we actually do have obviously new listeners as well. There's been a little bit of buzz about what is this all about. The topic that you're bringing to us, Ben, is it's a curious one for many people because they've heard about this, but then there's also the idea, is this really true, and what does this mean to live as an immortal? So maybe if you even dive in from that perspective, that what are that term immortal, what are you connotating from what does that actually mean?
Well, that's a good way to start. We can just, my definition of an immortal is somebody, it's at least 150 years, closer to 250 years of age, in my opinion, that has found out or discovered that death is a choice and not a predetermined event. In other words, they're living as long as they choose to live versus living every day in fear of dying. And that, to me, is the true meaning of an immortal. They may not be bulletproof, but they can sure survive the years and, quite frankly, don't have to worry about being shot, so to speak. They don't have to worry about being killed or die of a disease or of an illness or of being caught in the middle of a war. They found a way to choose to live as long as they want to live. And they know that, and they know it from inside their own bodies, their hearts, and then their souls and their minds. And that's, to me, is what a true immortal is, and that's what I've discovered in this incredible journey that I've taken to find these people and discover their secrets of extend their own life.
Okay, now we have a, let's see, Energetic is asking, are you familiar with the Castaneda's I guess, death defier? Does that have anything to do with this?
Well, as it happened in last show, there's always a few things that I've learned from this group, and that's that name kind of sounds familiar, but it's not someone that I'm familiar with. So again, that'll be something more I'll be researching at the end
of
this show.
I'm a bit familiar with that I find interesting with your research here is you're not necessarily talking, it's not having to follow the path of shamanism. These are very, you might say on one level, regular folk. I don't know how else to put it, and I don't mean that pejoratively, but it's regular people that somehow they've tapped into a certain belief system and a way of living that allows them to live in this state of consciousness that's reflected in the body that they're able to live immortally. So the Castaneda, so you're saying, what? Just because you were on before, I didn't hear anything about following a particular path other than there's an altering of beliefs. So,
exactly, and that's what I've discovered with these people is that they don't actually belong to a particular secret society or a particular group or a particular, let's say, way of life as far as a religious sect is concerned. They all seem to just be members of a community, but they're themselves, their own. They have their own beliefs, and it's pretty much the belief that there is a creator, and they live there. And there's two beliefs, big beliefs, I guess it is well, maybe more than that. We'll two to stick out in my mind: a belief in a creator, and a belief that death is a choice and not a predetermined event. Those are the two biggest beliefs I've noticed with this group, and particularly the gentleman. The 2,800-year-old gentleman that we, I'm sure, will be talking about at length tonight in the course of our discussion.
Mm. So to recap, to kind of go back to what your research brought you to, why you started the research, and what you found in your research, like the main foundational information of your research. Guess maybe we'll dive in there.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. And actually, that kind of will start the answer to our big question tonight, which was how could we believe that somebody could be living 2,800 years of age? That was the big question that we kind of left hanging, that I had my notes.
And so
I think if I kind of briefly step through my process of finding in my research, finding this gentleman, it'll kind of bring out some of the ideas, some of the facts, some of the interesting tidbits of information that made me believe that this gentleman really is 2,800 years of age. But before I get started, I wanted just to mention to your audience that if you do pick out somebody tonight, hopefully from the United States and Canada, I will send them a free copy of my book, autographed, of Wake Up Moments of Inspiration. And if you pick out somebody with just an email address, I can send them a sample chapter from the upcoming book, soon to be released, called Secrets of an Immortal. So, and if we have any more time, I have a couple other free gifts that are not on paperback form, but they're definitely something that I can give to all your audience if you want a free gift that I think you'll all enjoy, particularly this particular program. So,
well, we can start one with the first caller that just calls in to say hi, hey, with a question. How's that?
Okay. And then when you get that caller, just let me know, or do you want to pick that caller first, and then we'll continue on, what you want to do first.
So what we'll do, because we also have another question, things are lightening up here, Ben. First of all, the first caller that calls in will get a free copy of Ben Abba's book on the research that he has done. And the number is 347-539-5122. And then, Ben, we have a question in the chat. What beliefs could possibly allow someone to live that long?
And that's going to be the big question that we are going to go ahead and delve into as part of the answering that question after I finish my summary. But should I just go ahead and while you're waiting for that phone call or picking your phone call, should I just go ahead and summarize research?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and start kind of at the beginning. I was raised and educated in a traditional Midwest town, Midwest schools, Midwest college, in the heart sciences, and so and the Midwest religions. The traditional belief is that you know, what we're taught and in schools, that people live a typical life, was up to lifespan up to 75 years of age. But we had a few relatives, maybe a couple, a grandfather or uncle or aunt that lived in the 90s, and that was about it. Along came a coworker who dropped off a tape on my desk called Dead Doctors Don't Lie, that basically exposed to me the fact that it was possible that, well, first off, that the health givers themselves were living a shorter lifespan than the average American was, and that it was possible to go looking at the elderly in our society, the oldest living people alive, to find out what they did to survive, and maybe model what their life experiences was to extend our own lives, versus what we've been reading about in the newspapers and TV and even some of our health givers. Some of them that have gone out of their way to help people, but some of them have just basically given us the traditional medical line that is, take this pill and you'll be happy and you'll live another day, so to speak. Along that journey, I had several other unusual experiences. One of them was I got a chance on a bet to attend a Tony Robbins seminar, which ended up at the end of every one of his seminars. At that time, he was an unknown. We'd end up doing a firewalk at the time. And I don't know if you're familiar with firewalks, but basically you walk barefoot on a bed of hot coals, taking at least three or four steps on hot coals. And what that did to me is it opened my mind and opened my awareness that there's things out there that are not explained in their traditional science or traditional medicine or traditional religion. This nothing I'd learned in any of my schooling or in my Sunday practices explained what happened that night when I walked barefoot on hot coals and witnessed several hundred people doing the same thing. The next thing that happened in my life that was eye-opening was a chance to learn a technique called remote viewing. Now, remote viewing, if those who have not heard of it, it was a technique developed by the United States government essentially to spy on people that in areas and parts of the world where we couldn't send a secret agent to go get information. It was a way of collecting data in the, just about anywhere you could think of in the past, present, and future. And my first day of learning this technique, I was able to draw a picture that was in a sealed envelope, sealed, I never saw it, never wasn't told what was inside of it, wasn't even told what it was. I was just told simply it was a sealed envelope, a picture, and given a handful of numbers. And the drawing that I drew actually matched exactly what was in that picture. And if I took my drawing and overlaid that picture, it was like almost like I'd actually sketched it right from the picture or traced it from the picture. It was so, and again, that before that time, I'd seen and heard a few natural psychics do some of their things, and I was kind of on the edge of whether natural psychics could even accurately do what they claimed to do, or that it was just a trick. I wasn't sure if it was a magician's trick or actually a true tool or true science. But when I witnessed this drawing that I had drawn, somebody who doesn't, you know, barely believes in psychic abilities drew a picture that was matched this photograph, I soon realized that there is a whole world out there that truly defies what we've been taught, what we've been educated, and what we've been drilled through in our propaganda and our news media and whatever else, a new sources of information that we received. And that really took me to the next level, which essentially said, listen, there's a whole world out there that's yet to be explored, and that all I have to do is open my eyes, ask the right questions to the right people, and I will get the information that I need to discover what it is I want to discover. Taking a deep breath here, we'll just the next step was I was going to look for the oldest person alive. I had an experience as a computer consultant, a computer security consultant, looking for, among other things, hackers and fraudsters for financials. And so I developed sort of like a private investigator skills to find these people and track them down, most of it virtually, sometimes physically, throughout our country, and again, sometimes throughout the planet. And so I used these skills to try to find what I thought would be the oldest people alive. In my research,
yeah, I think one thing that I think just to put in too, that you came from this very perhaps more, like you said, Midwestern mainstream scientific background, and now all of a sudden you're going into more of this alternative, you know, world, if you will, you know, with the getting the ability, the remote view, getting the dead doctor, being triggered by that or inspired by the tape Dead Doctors Don't Lie. So you began this journey. I just want to make sure people know that it's that you, in a sense, didn't really embark on this consciously. It kind of came to you in this new direction you then started being guided into.
Exactly. I was guided by the tape, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, to just basically seek out my elderly relatives and friends and ask them, what is it that you used to survive so long? What are the things that you've done in your life? And, you know, sometimes a few acquaintances came along. They were in their 90s, and I would ask those questions. When I learned the technique of walking barefoot on coals, and then after that, I started thinking, well, maybe there's people out there that we don't know about. Maybe there's other things out there that are on record that we could find some information about. And before I started doing the remote viewing, I actually went on the internet and then did some research and found that there were people much older than what Guinness Book of World Records claims as the oldest person alive. They claim it's Jean Calment of 122 years of age. And yet I was able to research National Geographic, which had a group of people in the 160 years of age range, with a 168-year-old being the oldest, living in the mountains of Russia. Well, then I went and looked on the internet further and found there's Lee Ching-young, who, according to New York Times, died in 1933 at the age of 256 years of age. So we have, and then I can give you example after example of all these people from the 150 years to 250-year range that are on record, various records though, but on record as living long, healthy lives. Now, let me point out about the Lee Ching-young. He outlived 33 of his wives, was known as an herbalist, and that's how he made his living as an herbalist, and right up to the end was living a high-quality life. In fact, he was bragging that he was only 197 years of age. He was kind of lying about his age by 60 years younger than what he actually was. So he was still in the process of trying to probably pick up chicks by, you know, telling them, oh, I'm only 997, you know, instead of going to the whole full 56. So it's throughout these this research, I found that a lot of people, it seemed like everyone just seemed to just plain out lie about their age. So it's other things that you have to use to find out, which is documentation, records, and eyewitness accounts to find out what their true age was. So as we...
what kind of accounts? You said you look in some of the accounts to find the age, because you can't really look, you said, in the license, right?
Right. It's basically, there isn't really good records as far as a birth certificates for people that are over 150 years of age. In Lee Ching-young's case, and again, you can look this up on the internet, they found records going back 150 years that in various government documents, and I believe there's a couple of colleges that celebrated his 100th birthday, well, or 100-and-something birthday or something. So it was obvious that the records, 150-year-old records, pointed to him being over 100 years of age. Obviously, he needed to be 256. Or 250 years of age or older. So that's how the New York Times verified him as being over 250 years of age, because there was records, and there were some eyewitness accounts that pointed that he was 60 years older than what he claimed to be. Having 33 wives also kind of helps verify that you've been getting married and divorced in the same year quite a few times, or that you actually are pretty busy, or you actually did outlive these wives. And again, he outlived them, and there's nothing on record, supposedly on record, that he ever divorced any of them. So that's quite a challenge feat right there. So, so to continue on with the summary, I took this, realized that the potential was out there, that there were people living among us who were hidden from history that could actually be living longer than 150 years or even 250 years or more. And that's where I started using my advanced skills, which one of them includes remote viewing, along with my traditional investigation skills to try to find out who was living among us or where they might be living, and if possible, try to meet these people, make contact with them, and learn from them their secrets of longevity. How did they survive this many years? Eventually, I did some research, again, using all these different tools, and I came up with what I believe to be about 225 people that I fully believe that are over 250 years age. They're still alive today, living among us. The oldest person I could find in the United States at that time was 160 years of age, who lives in Arizona. I have yet to interview him, but I've been told by several friends who have met him that he's approximately 160 years of age. The reason they believe that is he has a wanted poster of himself when he was 20 or 30 years of age from the 1800s that he shows once in a while and brags about. They also have other people that have known him pretty much that are still alive today that have known him, that he was pretty, like, I considered a grandfather to them when he was a kid, they were kids. So there's obviously something that's it allowed him to live that long. And the same story is true for a lot of the people I've found in other parts of the country. Ironically, the eldest woman I found was living in India. Again, same situation, about 150, 160 years of age. She's outlived a lot of her family. She's got great-grandchildren, great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren out there. And the theory is that she too has outlived her witnesses, but there's enough out there that are still alive today. So yeah, she was a grandmother when I was a baby, you know, a youngster. So there's why I think there's some correlations to that. I found some people close to the 1,000 year range in the Asia, and in particular Tibet, and of course some of the mountains around that area. There's many stories that I've heard of people. The gurus, the Tibetan monks, in about 1,000 to 1,500 year range, living in those areas, and I believe at least one of them is true. I haven't completely verified them all, but I did find data that suggested that they are out there and they do live that long. But the eldest gentleman I found was living around the Mediterranean area, and that was the one I decided to target first after I was able to find more data on this person. It looked very likely that this person existed and he lived in that area. And it looked like it was in a place that was accessible to me. So I took the trouble of spending a lot of time and effort to basically target him and find out exactly who he was, where he lived, and how old he was. And I guess it's a good point in time to explain to your audience, from all my research, from all the data I had, and from what I found out about this gentleman, I fully believe he's almost 2,800 years old. And he's been living among us all that long in the same body as he has today and the same way pretty much as he lives today. And a lot of the same types of attitude and belief systems as he has today. Although he has learned much over history and there's been some changes in technology and the way things have happened. But for the most part, he seems to be pretty close to the same lifestyle in a lot of ways that he's had since his childhood. And that's kind of really where the. Go ahead.
It sounds like they don't lose that. Now we have four callers on the line, but I'm going to go to, if we take a minute to go to line one. Let's see, here we are. Hi, 334-565, you're on Awakenings. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Who is this?
This is Queen Goddess. How are you both?
Great. How are you doing, Queen Goddess?
I am doing wonderful, and enjoying my life and wondering how does a person 2,800 years old look?
Well, that's
we'll
a good
get
question.
To that question. We'll get to that
yeah,
question, but also Queen Goddess, which are you calling in 334? Where are you calling from?
Alabama.
Oh, Alabama. Okay. Well, you're the first caller in the queue out of five, so you will get a free copy of Ben's book.
I'm excited. Wow.
Yes, yes, yes. This is great. So,
thank you.
I'll have you, how's this? If she emails me her
mailing address?
Email or her, yeah, mailing address, and I can send it to you. Does that work?
That works perfect. That would work great. And hello from Alabama. Hello, Alabama.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm excited. Thank you so much.
I know. It's a great book. And if you just email me, you want to take this down?
I'm ready.
Okay. At michelle@selfinlight.com. Or I guess you could even email Ben. What about that? Is that better, Ben?
Could do that as well. Either way, I just if you... You can check it out, and anyway, you know who she is, and you can verify it.
Okay, okay. So email me at Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E,
okay.
At S-E-L-F.
Is that S as in Saint?
Oh, yes.
E as in excellent? Oh, self.
Yes.
Self.
Self.
All right.
Like self in
I gotcha.
light.com.
Self-light?
You can also email me at self-in-light.
Self-in-light, like that, in-light.
Yeah, I-N. And you can also email me via Blog Talk Radio also.
I will do both.
You have a camp. Good, perfect. And then I will send it to Ben, and you get a free copy of his book.
I am really excited because I want to know more about the immortals. So I am very grateful. Thank you so much.
Great.
You're welcome.
So now
you're welcome.
I'm on.
I was going to say I'm on Blog Talk Radio too. So if she did want to send it directly, but I would rather she send it to you and then you forward on to me.
And I'm on Blog Talk as well. In terms of verifying who I am, I have a show on Blog Talk as well.
Well, then if you're both, you can email each other directly. How's that? It's all good. I'd love to hear from you too. But you could say hi. But you could also email Ben directly and. Get the address, and then he will send the book out to you.
Okay, and that's Ben, A-B-B-A?
Correct.
And that's the name of your show. I'll put you on as a favorite, and I will then forward you a email as well, so you'll know that you got me.
Perfect.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So now to the question, what does a 28-year-old body look like?
2,800-year-old body.
2,800, yeah. We know what a 2,800 can look like. 2,800. Thank you, Queen. Thank you, Queen.
Well, this is an excellent question, and actually it is, to me, the top question of all here, and that's basically it looks like a typical 65-year-old person. And the best analogy I can give you is somebody that I'm familiar with is Mark Victor Hansen. He reminds me a lot of Mark Victor Hansen, maybe a little thinner. And with that kind of energy and kind of spunk. However, when he opens up his mouth and smiles at you, he's got teeth that look like they're 3,000 years old. The short answer to the story behind that is that toothpaste has only been around for about 100 some years, and before then they had to use what he called was a gargle that he made out of oregano. And while it did a good job preserving his original teeth, it basically turned his teeth pretty black, and they look really ugly. So that's his big giveaway, is it gives you a full smile and you see teeth from, you know, from some kind of a scary movie. That's what he's got. So, but he looks pretty good for his age, and believe it or not,
oregano,
yeah, the typical herb that we use on pizza and a few other things. It's a very excellent antibacterial antibacterial drug that, or antibacterial properties that that help preserve his teeth and protect them from decay.
That's incredible.
Sounding like not to gargle with it, though. We have the...
Well, I'm actually starting to add... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But it's amazing. I believe that his bones, it obviously helped his bones. It obviously helped his,
yeah.
I want formulas that this guy, I want to know what he's been eating, and I'm sure I'm going to find some wonderful things out in this book. But what he ate, what he thought, you know, where he lived, and are there any females?
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
Well, those
are
all good questions.
Females? Yeah.
Well, I, when you're ready, I'll go ahead and answer those, go through the list and answer all of those.
Absolutely. Are there any females? Yeah.
Well, the oldest female I found was living in India. She's about almost 160 years of age. I don't know why this is. I expected to find more females that were immortal than males, but it turned out to be just the opposite. And I don't know why that is, other than maybe the men are too stubborn to die, or for whatever reason they just... are not emotionally attached as much to the death of loved ones as maybe the women are. I don't know. But I fully believe that women can live as long as men. And typically, statistically speaking, they usually live longer than men. But as far as these immortals are concerned, they all seem to be men over the age of 160 years of age. Why that is, again, that's a mystery to me at this point.
It's interesting. Because because statistically, or up to a certain age, you know, in our other system of thought and living, the women tend to live longer.
Exactly, and the Guinness Book of World Records has the oldest living human alive as Jean Calment, a woman, at 122 years of age. And so to them, the women live longer than men, and to other... with my research, women are living longer than men in my own family and among my friends. But when it comes to looking for these immortals, there's over 150 years of age, there's more men than women.
I have another question. After you reach a certain age, your body, maybe it's a comment in question, your body tends to, males become females become males. You think that's relative to this?
Oh, I definitely don't, because this gentleman, he likes to court and marry young child-bearing women when he gets to about every 100, 150 years of age. So obviously his plumbing and his functionality is working just fine, and he does consider procreation a big part of his extending his own life. So... I believe that as men become wiser, they don't become as aggressive. They don't become doing the stupid things that young men like to do. And they also become more caring and loving. So that part of it I do believe is true. But they still have their faculties, and they still do some of the male courtship part of it anyway, which I believe means their hormones are still working.
But sometimes the body, like men, after a certain age, some men develop breasts, some women develop mustaches.
Right.
That's what I was suggesting.
I've heard that.
Yes, this is my thought. I'm thinking, because I do believe that women do have that longer possible life, and that if maybe that somewhere in there that transformation took place. This is just my theory on it.
Well, I have seen it in a lot of people, and I tell you, when you gain a little weight, those men tend to get the breasts pretty quickly. I think it has to do with their hormone balance, and their way of life. Again, what I've discovered with these people is their lifestyle dictates their living longer, and I think part of that lifestyle also keeps their hormones in check, so that they got the right balance of hormones, whether it be the men or the women, they seem to have the ones that live the longest seem to have their hormones at the right balance. And again, it's not hard for us to be out of balance because of poor diet, lack of exercise, our lifestyle, You know, I've heard that people that take some of these illicit drugs, the men will grow the breasts and the women will grow a mustache. That's how you can tell somebody that's a pot smoker, they say, is if they have their hormones are way out of balance. I'm told that soy milk puts hormones out of balance. Just simple things like that in our diet, whereas a healthy diet, a healthy lifestyle keeps hormones in balance, and then that basically takes place.
Now, we've been hearing that about the soy from a lot of different sources, and there's a lot of research on that it is difficult to digest, but as well as putting hormones really out of balance, out of whack. So that's interesting. Now, you said, Ben, about lifestyle. Now, so it's beliefs, food, but also lifestyle. What did you notice in the immortals? What was their lifestyle like?
Well, and that's the good question here, and it's one that's going to take a book to spell it out for you. But I'm going to give you the best summary I can right now. One of them is the lifestyle is again the belief system, the programming that they have beliefs in the Creator, belief in death is not part of their life. And then I noticed that at least the 2,800-year-old gentleman. Just doesn't attend funerals. The Tim all has departed, basically. I think he's probably been forced to a couple times because of, you know, a spouse or something. But for the most part, he believes all his friends and family are out there somewhere, have just moved on to a different lifestyle or moved to a different part of the world that he's now with. So he doesn't attend funerals. He doesn't, his language isn't, the language changes to that of life and not death. You know, they don't claim, oh, I'm going to die over this or I'll die for that chocolate cake or, you know, the only thing for sure things in life are death and taxes. They don't say that stuff. They say only sure things in life are taxes and more taxes. Or they'll always, you know, I live for this. I live for the chocolate cake. I live for that. You know, this simple changes
the language,
in their...
They change you're saying changes in the language then?
Exactly. I noticed that when I started to incorporate into my life the changes I noticed in my languages. A good example of this is the famous musician John Denver, who I'm told his friends and family he was going to die in his plane. He was going to die in his plane. He probably is going to die in his plane. He will die in his plane. Well, guess what? Off the California coast, his plane crashed and he died in his plane. Language does make a difference. There are I don't care where you are in this planet, people are listening to you, and it even if it's the Creator itself, the spirits of other people, the spirits of other beings, I believe that people are listening and they give you what you want. And if you keep saying you want to die this way, you want to keep dying in your sleep, you're going to die in your sleep. Well, guess what? Sooner or later, you probably will die in your sleep. Or I would never want to die that way. I never want to die that way. Well, you're going to die the way you do want to die. And if you keep saying, I want to live, I want to be immortal, I want to be immortal, guess what? You're going to start being immortal. And that's maybe a free gift I'll give to your audience right now. It's, just start your day. I want to be an immortal. And then go into the next level when you get comfortable in saying that, I am an immortal. And watch the little changes in your lifestyle, in your language, in your food, in your programming. I started doing that, and I did notice those little changes. I did notice the different things. And then I started making a little bit wiser decisions about what I want to eat, what am I going to drink, and try to reduce some of the stress in my life. We kind of mentioned this last show, how the stress is a big killer to a lot of people. And one of these things that's very common among these immortals is how they become less stressful lifestyles, whether it be their occupation, their relationships, their the way that where they live, what they do, and everything around them is about living a stress-free life. Well, if we can model that in our own lives, we'll extend our lives as well. And this is one of the things that I noticed when I started making the claim, I am an immortal every day. I noticed that I'm starting to make choices that bring me more less stress in my life. And I'm not quite 100% there yet where I still have my occupation as a security consultant. We have our stressful moments. It's just we have deadlines. We have, you know, something comes up, basically an issue comes up, and it's just like a firefighting team. We got to respond right away. Well, that's a stressful situation. Or maybe it's other things we do in our life. Some of our hobbies. You know, jumping out of airplanes, that can be kind of stressful to some people. You know, climbing a mountain without a safety rope, that can be stressful. Well, if we choose to want to be an immortal, we'll choose a more safer hobby. Maybe it'll be bowling instead of mountain climbing. Maybe it'll be playing a game of chess with a friend or family member instead of jumping out of planes. Things like that seem to extend our lives a little bit more. I've noticed that in all this pattern in a lot of these people.
So I keep hearing life-affirming thoughts. So it's about really in the language that it's, listen, Mystics is saying in the chat room, language very important. That which comes out of the mouth or words is just as important what you put in. The body responds to subtle programming. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe these immortals are all along doing subtle programming. Maybe some were aware of it, maybe some weren't, but it sounds like they're doing subtle programming to program for this life enhancement, this long life.
Exactly, and that's exactly the big secret that I discovered is it's all about programming. And whether it's intentional or unintentional or both, in my opinion, it's both, that this the programming has made the changes in their life, which includes a belief system, includes a lifestyle that has extended their lives. And that's the simplest answer I can give you. And again, as we go through more, I can give you more examples of each and break that out a little bit further and give you some more context. But it all boils down, in my opinion, to the programming. And it's the major programming, and then it breaks into the subtle programming, and then it breaks into changes in beliefs and lifestyles. And that's how I've noticed the commonality between all these people.
Great. Queen, you have another question? And I do see you, caller 757. We will be getting to you. Queen, did you have another question or comment?
Yes. My aunt, my great aunt, lived to be 100, and she said that's how long she wanted to live. My great grandmother lived to be over 100, but I'm just reaffirming what he's saying. She said that was as she got older, and I don't know before that what her thoughts were, and she didn't eat any particular, you know, kind of food that I'm aware of. She might ate a lot of oregano. And other things that I wasn't aware of, but she specifically said she wanted to make it to be 100. And shortly after she became 100, she left. And my great grandmother, her mother, lived older than that. And I'm wondering too, with the DNA, what that has to do with it—the particular lineage and/or bloodline. I'm really obviously interested in this. The possibilities are exciting. At least maybe I could finish all the work that I've chosen to do, that I want to do in this particular lifespan, which is a lot.
Yes, you have a lot to comment on there. I believe the DNA, we all have the DNA necessary if we turn it on the right way to extend our lives. That's my belief. What I've seen from these people is all of them that are living past the 250 years of age, in particular the 200-year-old gentleman, have procreated children that have not lived that length of time. I believe the 2800-year-old told me that his oldest child was like 225, was the oldest that's ever lived.
Oh, my.
So in my opinion, that means it's not, to me, hereditary as much it is a belief system and a programming. But I haven't tested his DNA. It's a future task, a challenge of mine, simply because out of respect for him, I'm not going to go poke him and chase him in the bathroom. But if the opportunity presents itself, I'm going to do that. However, as a scientist, in order to make a conclusion, we have to have something to compare it to. And quite frankly, we don't have DNA samples of people 122 years of age or older to really compare it to two and see if the DNA will show us something. I think I'm curious to see what it does say, if it says anything about if it can really truly prove his age, if it can prove his lineage. I'm told that DNA, you can prove someone's lineage from DNA, but that's not conclusive yet. There is a gentleman who's considered the authority on immortality. His name is Dr. Aubrey de Grey. I don't know if you're familiar with that name. But I've been in contact with him, and one of the things that we've talked about is what to do with his DNA sample, and I fully intend to get him a DNA sample to test out. His idea about immortality is using technology and working on the DNA to basically make subtle changes using medicine to make those changes. But I believe it's not necessary. It's all can be done with our heart and our heads to in our spirit to change, extend our lives. But I'm very curious to see what his DNA does show, and when the time comes, I will release those results, whatever I find for the world. I think it's important to know that.
Wow.
So I can say, but no, what you're saying, Ben, is that it is within us.
That's what I fully 100% believe,
yeah.
That all of us, man or woman, any age, you know, whether we're five seconds year old to, 90 years old or even older, we can all extend our own lives. Remember, you said your relative died at 100 years of age. To this 2,800-year-old, that's a baby. That's truly a baby.
I can relate to that thought process coming from someone of that, 2,800 years old. But to me, it's validation of the power of, which I already know, I honor from time to time, not from time to time, most of the time, the power of words and thoughts and that kind of thing. But it just, for me, it's saying, within your grasp. It's just helping me to align myself to it easier than not having had relatives that lived that long and made that declaration.
Well, I have a really good comment that kind of relates to everything we've been talking about here about that. When I was growing up in the Midwest, excuse me?
Well, then after that comment, we'll get to caller 757. Thanks, Queen, for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you
so much. And glad you got that. Won that book.
So am I.
Yes, indeed.
Okay,
I'll go ahead with
comment?
That. Yeah, let's go ahead with the comment. When I was growing up in the Midwest, my dad would often barbecue out in the grill, and once in a while, a little ember would escape, and I would run across the yard the ember would be under the grass, and I would still burn my feet. In fact, a couple times I remember I was seriously burned by a tiniest ember about the size of a pea, and yet here I was. With a group of 200 people walking barefoot at least three to four, maybe five steps on burning hot coals, truly this was mind and belief over matter. And that's what made me realize that our minds and our hearts and our spirits control a lot more than just figuring out an equation on a piece of paper. It was truly an eye-opening experience to me. I don't believe I was hypnotized, but it was definitely words and beliefs that convinced me to be able to walk across that burning hot coals. And I think it was I was programmed to do at that event that gave me the ability to succeed. Because I walked across there was no burns. There was no scars or anything. Yet, as a child, I burned my feet constantly on hot tar, on the sidewalk, and a few times on these embers, which were minuscule compared to what this hot coals had to offer. So definitely there is the power of belief is tremendous, and I saw it and witnessed it with my own eyes. And I challenge anyone in the audience, if you want to have that experience, I think Tony Robbins is still doing it today, although he may not be quite the speaker he was back then, but he was definitely, that firewalk is an incredible. But I would say the most incredible non-religious or spiritual experience in a non-religious setting, I could put it that way, maybe for me anyway. At least it definitely opened up my eyes to a lot of what the world has to offer.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Get to that caller. Or have your own fire walk. Hi, 757-654. You're on Awakenings.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, Ben. This is Kathy.
Hey, Kathy! Great to connect with you. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, that's fine. I'm enjoying it. I know I'm about to bug Ben again because I listened to him and Roy Solomon showed. I think it was last night, wasn't it, Ben?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yes,
okay.
I was just full of questions then. But anyway, yeah, I wanted to ask, how long are you still in communication with him and how long have you interviewed him? How long have you known him?
Well, I think it's getting close to 10 years. It's been a long process just to get him to open up to me. I think it's been about the early 2000s. I wonder if I did talk to him in 99 or not. I know about him since 99, 98 time frame. And yes, I make contact with him, but it's not as frequent. It's like at least a couple times a year. And I'm going to try to, you know, whenever I get a chance, I'm hoping to catch him before. He does have a tendency to move around off and on, but I want to catch him before he decides to move again. His wife passed away not too long ago, and I think he's going to get ready to make another move, you know, change his lifestyle, change his identity and stuff. So I'm trying to want to catch him before that happens. But so I would say at least twice a year, and if possible, as many times as I can. There's different ways to communicate with him, and but the easiest way, obviously, is to go over there and visit.
And I do know paleontologists can tell pretty much the age of something by if there's any DNA left in bones. So, yeah, if they can do that, I'm sure they can tell how old he really is.
That's just it. The only way we're absolutely positively 100% going to know his true age is to perform a dissection of him. And I refuse to dissect a living human being.
No.
It's just so
no,
the only other alternatives.
Spinal tap.
Well, even now, I'm kind of wondering. You know, I'm gonna try to get a blood DNA sample. There's such thing as hair. Dr. Aubrey de Grey recommends a hair sample. You know, I may chase him in the bathroom sometime, because there's a lot of information there, or, you know, catch some spit. But to be honest with you, I think that the only true way we're ever going to know for 100% sure, other than the information I've given you and will give you, is this a full dissection. But, you know, even then, they always say that the only way you're going to prove like a Bigfoot is to just dissect one. But I still think there's enough information around there about these people that, you know, there's enough eyewitness accounts that it just has to be. And that's one of the things we were going to talk about tonight was what evidence we got out there about this man. I can present some of it tonight and some of it I have to hold on to it at the moment. But there is a lot that we can learn from them, even if we can't prove their identity right now. You know what I mean? It's just, if there's enough information out there that even suggests that they're this old, and we can just learn their secrets of how they lived this long, that's a lot we can learn from. And like I mentioned before, there's a lot I learned already from this man, regardless of how old he really is.
Right. I don't blame you, not one bit, no. But, and I understand where you're coming from. But, you know, a lot of people are doing a lot of a lot of scientists are trying to figure out how to slow cell growth down to prolong aging. I don't know why, but I'm just thinking that has a lot to do with the mind, too, because the mind's the best computer of it all. Anyway, that's just me. So.
That's true. But the mind is the biggest. That's a very good point.
Well, exactly. One of the things that people say is get a DNA sample that'll tell you exactly his age. And the reason they say that is because there's an element of the DNA called the telomeres, which people have used to determine the age of various organisms, you know, mice and even human beings. Well, we don't know if his mind is capable of slowing that aging process of his telomeres. Maybe that's how he's extended his own life, is he's used his mind and to control his DNA. Maybe if he does do that, when it makes perfectly sense that he would, then that the DNA wouldn't show us anything. It would just show us that, yep, he's a 65-year-old man, but maybe because he's been able to control it with his mind, not because that's his actual age.
And besides, at the turn of the last century, not this one, we really didn't have much to play with except for our mind.
No, exactly.
But
if there's
thank you so much. I'm going to get off, but thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Kathy, thanks for calling in. Bye. Good to talk to you.
Let me kind of give your audience a teaser, if I may. And this kind of answers that original question we were going to ask at the beginning here. When I was able to put all the information about this gentleman together, including the information which I can't really talk about too much, but has to do with the biblical information and some of the historical information related to this man and collaborate his stories, when I was able to put it all together, I had a permanent case of the goosebumps, and it still hasn't gone away yet. I don't think it ever will, because once you realize what we've got here, it's like, I mean, I did. I just went, wow, this is way more than I expect. I was looking for, you know, an older person that lived a long, happy life, and I found out, kicked over a rock and found something way, way beyond that. And the reason I say that is because this man's had biblical experiences And there's information that I was able to collaborate in the Bible and in other historical documents that suggest this man that this particular man did live as an immortal 2,000 years and more ago. So that is something that was one of the, and then we kind of talked about this question, how does people believe he's more than 2,800 years of age? Well, until I did this process, until I did this research, I wasn't aware that in the Bible and collaborating historical documents, non-biblical documents, that suggest that there's people 2,800 years of age that were immortal. I mean, to me, there were immortal 2,000 years ago that is documented in the Bible, documented in historical documents, and it just happens that this one person happens to be one of those people that's documented in both those groups of research. So that's what, when that got together with the other information that I had, that's when the goosebumps started, and I haven't gone away yet. And in fact, they're starting to grow again here. So we can, the more I talk about this incredible gentleman.
Wow, it's amazing. And a lot of this isn't written down, though. So this is kind of a new direction in this, Ben, is to be able to not only talk about this in a broadcast fashion, but also to write this information down, to begin to track this.
Oh, yes. And that's the thing is the more I talk with him, there's just more other incredible information, not only historical, unwritten history that's out there, historical information, but the core, which is what we've been talking about all along, is how to extend our own lives. But some of the this kind of his general wisdom about life in general, his perspective of life is just incredible. Did you want to delve into one of those right now? We're at this point of the program.
Yes, and then also Gail is asking if you can reveal some of the interesting facts you have learned from the 2,800-year-old person.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, and that's why I was going to relate to that question as well. One of the things that I found incredibly important that I learned from this gentleman, that which is something that does relate, then we can prove it, is human interaction, the importance of human interaction. I don't know if we talked about this on the other show, but one of the things he told me that was real critical for extending his own life is that he made it a point to spend at least one meal a day with another human being, whether it be a family member, a friend, or just sitting in a restaurant with a bunch of people around him. And the reason he suggested that is he felt that it was his connection, another connection with the Creator, is as human beings, we have auras, we have this energy, we're energy fields that surround us completely. And I believe that there's this energy exchange when two human beings come together and have a communication, especially when they're in, you know, we're talking now over the phone, but especially when we're in person with each other, I believe that actually feeds our souls, feeds our energy fields as well. Somehow, some way, I've been able to see, scientifically speaking, these energy fields and see their interaction between energy fields. I've seen people, when they get together with a certain person, that energy increases, and I've seen people, when they get together with a certain person, their energy decreases. And I noticed that this person, his energy is very high, it's very incredible, but I believe he believes that he needs to be with another human being to keep that level as high as it is. And I believe that energy is important for him, for all of us to survive, because we just cannot survive, I believe, living in a cave. If you notice that people that live long lives, but they're by themselves, whether because they're a widower or a widow, they always seem to have like a dog or a cat or some kind of pet with them. And I believe it's because they crave that interaction, invisible energy that the beings would put out of each other. But still, I believe if they not the while the dog and the cat can give out some good energy that they can interact with, and it does help them, I believe when they interact with people, the energy is even stronger and more, and actually more powerful. So, like for instance, we might be able to get some energy interacting with a pet, whether it be a dog, cat, probably, again, depending on the animal. but I think the human being energy is like the healthier energy, and that's what they find, or this gentleman found so critical in his life extension, and I believe that can be easily proven, that there is something important to us interacting to our energy fields. It just the feeling is that this is something that is a critical piece of the pie that we've not explored at all as human beings, as scientists. And you know, it's when we wish each other well, when we pray for each other, when we just give each other hugs or handshakes, or just even patting each other in the back, I noticed it does have a positive impact on our life and our lifestyle. And maybe that simple interaction is what is needed to extend our lives. So that was one real incredible fact that I learned from him. Couldn't find it in any books, but I kind of knew it was kind of true because I've seen it in my lifestyle. But it just brought together a lot of information that I've already known that he was able to encapsulate and put into a very few sentences that just made a whole lot of sense.
Now, this interaction, you know, it's interesting you talk about the interaction because I find that too. And in fact, a lot of times with clients of mine, I will say you need input. You need energetic input. And that obviously comes from various sources because all is energy. But like you're saying, that the energy from human beings can be revitalizing if it's you know, the life enhancing ones. You know.
Yes, and one of the things is, you know, we're just learning right now that the very minimum what's all about this energy field that surrounds us and what it needs to feed us and keep us healthy. I know there's some psychics out there, I've now met them, that can see this electrical field and can determine our health and our well-being, our future and our past, all from this energy field that surrounds each one of us. Well, if that information is sitting out there, it makes sense that making that field, keeping it healthy and keeping it fed, if I may use that term, is a part, an important part of our living and our lifestyle.
Mm. And then you said also that these immortals kind of knew, like, perhaps people or situations not to be around, that were not life-enhancing. So they stay clear of those is what I'm hearing.
Well, I work in a lot of different office settings, and there are these people, which they call them, I don't know, energy vampires, I call them, they're just the downers. You know, you can name the terms. I'm sure you've come across at least one or two of those people you just gotta stay away from because they just drag you down or whatever, or maybe they're having a bad day, or maybe they're really sick and they're just kind of dragging you down. You get tired just sitting next to them and such. And I know that they have had an effect on me a little bit, and I know that they've had a lot of effect on other people. So when I've seen this in interaction, I can just tell that, and then of course you see the opposite when these people are full of energy, they're energetic. I sometimes will go into a room and light the room up, but sometimes I have so much energy, I notice that some people, they just can't, they go, well, you know, this is too much. And they have to kind of take a little step back, and then if I'm gone too long, they'll want me back in that room, or they want me back in, you know, in their lives, so to speak. So I noticed that there's a definitely interaction. There's people that feed off of my energy, and there's people that avoid other people that have energy that for some reason it drains them. So I've seen that happen, and I met a few people that are also energetic. Mentioned a gentleman, Mark Victor Hansen. He's a person that walks into a room, he starts talking, all of a sudden the room gets energy. Tony Robbins, the same situation. I never saw so much energy out of a gentleman in my whole life as when he walked into a room and started. And again, I've only been to a couple of his early, we call them motivational seminars, but, well, I was motivated at the end of that seminar. There's no doubt about it. And that was his energy, his words, his techniques.
Whip things up. But now I think it sounds like the law of resonance. To whom are you resonating with? What kind of energy? Because for some people that have that kind of energy, it actually innervates them or gives them less energy.
Well, you know, there's a lot of truth. There is a lot of truth to that. I noticed that when it comes to music, certain music just energizes me, And some music brings me down, and some music I just want to stay away from. But it also depends on my mood of the day or what's going on in my life. For instance, sometimes the relaxing music just feels good, and I feel relaxed and energy. It takes the stress away. And sometimes in the morning I want to crank it up to some old favorite rock and roll song. It just gets me all jazzed up and wakes me up and gets me ready for work, you know. So there's different types of energy out of music. Same is true for light. I mean, the light energy, sometimes the nice subtle energy of a sunset is just really invigorating, but sometimes I need the bright light to get motivated. Sometimes, you know, once in a while, just a nice quiet evening and it's a little bit of darkness or a moonlight. Sometimes the moonlight will just invigorate you. It depends on your who you are, what you are, and your being. But I do know that all different forms of energy do resonate with us. And like you said, some people are meant to resonate with each other, and some people are not. But there's some people that just, I don't care who you are, they're going to bring you down. And I don't care who you are, there's some people that will bring you up. And it all depends on what is it that you resonate with.
Yeah, it's a vibrate. You have to find that frequency. Light in the chat is asking, wisdom. What is a lot of the wisdom that you receive from these people?
Well, again, that was kind of one of the things the thought of spending a meal a day was a good piece of wisdom that I've really embraced totally. One of the things that he brought up about general wisdom would say history repeats itself. He noticed it quite a bit that, you know, the technology, the toys may have improved over the years, but basically the history is just repeating itself. I think he feels like he's rewatching the fall or kind of towards the end of the Roman Empire when, again, another empire would come up. And again, he's seen a lot of things as far as, he's gone through all the world wars, even before we had such a term as world war. And to him, it was like, more people fighting over the stupidest things and why they want to do this kind of stuff. General wisdom as far as, again, making the most out of a simple part of life. He really enjoys, this gentleman really enjoys the task of fishing. It's kind of a favorite sport of his. And to me, I was growing up, we grew up with a family that fishes, but to me it was kind of boring because you sit in a boat and you'd wait all day and maybe you might get a bite and maybe you wouldn't. And to him, it wasn't the bite that was important. It was important. It was the time spending enjoying the planet, the surrounding events, maybe having a nice conversation with somebody while you're in the boat. That to him was more important than catching the fish. And it got me to take a look at, he's right. It's that human interaction kind of a thing. It's interacting with the planet, vibrating with what you know. Obviously, if he's never going to catch a fish in that boat, he's going to get bored and do something else or go somewhere else to fish. But to him, he always knew he was going to catch a fish. That was kind of funny, too, is I know I'm going to catch a fish. I just know exactly what fish it is. I don't know when it's going to be, but I know I'm going to catch a fish today. So he seemed to be a master of his environment. That was something that was kind of interesting little tidbit, where I don't have to worry about whether I'm going to starve today, pay the bills today. Everything is just going to come to me that I need, and I'm going to enjoy it to the fullest. He also enjoyed just nice long walks through parks, watching people, interacting with people, enjoyed spending time with his family and friends. And again, I think it's the importance of human interaction was really important to him in his life, whether it be the sharing of the meal. He enjoyed the local sports in the Mediterranean area. Their version of football, which we call soccer, is huge out there. And he couldn't help himself but to cheer on the local team and talk to people about those kind of things. And that to him wasn't so much that the team would win, but it was more important that he was there participating and part of the community and sharing their love of their local team and, what was happening, what was going on there. And I find that that's a good point. A lot of this, whether it be with fishing or taking your walk or watching the team, it's all various forms of meditation. And maybe that's the key there is his versions of meditation, whatever he was most comfortable with, is he made sure he incorporated in his daily life, and that was important to him.
Sounds like Tammy is saying in the chat, keeping it simple. It all sounds like not a lot of complications in the life.
For him, it sure was. His life was a very simple life. I think the most complicated thing he has, he recently purchased a TV. I think something about, he's got a 10 or 20 years ago, he bought an air conditioner we thought was a very wonderful invention. One of the things I asked him was, what was the most incredible invention he's ever witnessed? What was the thing that most impressed him the most? And he said it was the train systems. He watched and witnessed from scratch the train systems throughout the Mediterranean Sea, whether it be in the Middle East, Turkey, or Europe, all of them evolve, and where they have subways and they have interacting trains. You can take a train all the way around the Mediterranean Sea practically if you wanted to. And to him, that was the most incredible thing he ever witnessed, because it was many years in the making, but it was technology now that connects the world, his world, all together. He can simply just walk a few blocks and be on a train and be on trains for the rest of his journey wherever he wanted to go around the Mediterranean Sea. He just thought that was pretty incredible. Obviously,
what does he think about the contemporary world right now?
Well, he has taken a few plane flights, and I think he said it was late 60s, early 70s, he took a Swiss Air flight to Switzerland. And he said it was okay. I had a feeling he wasn't real comfortable on his flight. I think that kind of got him a little shook up a little bit. But he does take a flight every couple of years or so. He has to go to Switzerland, where he does his banking. That's where his most of his banking is. And there's a long story behind that, which would be a fascinating one to tell sometime. But he has most of his banking there, and he has to travel back there from time to time. And he found that to be quite interesting. He didn't say too much about, I offered him an iPod once, and he said didn't think much of it. He said, I just enjoy singing on the piano once in a while. So I think he's kind of like reluctantly embraced technology, but only the simplest of the technology. He doesn't have a computer, doesn't have email. I believe his granddaughter has, and it probably has showed it to him a few times. He doesn't own a car. Yeah, it's very simple.
Now, some of the other immortals that were, let's say, not yet on this planet as long, did you see common themes between all of them?
That's what I was trying to do, was trying to find some information about him. I didn't make physical contact with those other immortals. I didn't interview them or get a chance to talk with them. But I did get some information from my research. I mean, there was just some things about him that I was able to pick up. And one of them was that the biggest one I found that sticks in my mind was that they all are I call CRDs, the calorie-restricted diet people. They seem to all have very simple, limited diets. They seem to eat in all day where I eat one meal, basically. They're just very simple diets, limited diets, just enough food to get them through the next meal. That seemed to be a very common theme. Again, living very limited lifestyle as far as stress is concerned. A low stress lifestyle seemed to be a very common factor, and the common factor of the belief system, the belief in a creator, the belief that they don't need to, they don't have to die, or don't have to believe in death. That seemed to be a very common factor too.
Mm-hmm. Now we have a question from Kathy in the chat. What your interests are?
What my interests are. Well, this was obviously one of my interests, was to find out. My biggest interest is to discover the secrets of the universe. I guess that's my biggest interest. I'm curious when I see some things that just, go beyond explanation but need an explanation. And one of them was, of course, whether it was the oldest living person alive. Let me kind of go back a little bit to my remote viewing days. When I did learn how to remote view, to me it was like a new toy, and of course I wanted to check out everything. And remote viewing is something it takes about sometimes an hour, sometimes a few hours to get an answer. So it's not exactly the quickest way of getting information. But one of the things I was curious about is, you know, do these things called Bigfoot really exist? You know, what about the UFOs and that kind of stuff? And I started doing some of the remote viewing sessions on that. And the fun thing was you got some answers. I got some interesting answers out of all that. But the difficulty was a lot of these phenomena you can't really verify. And so that's when I started pointing it to target the oldest person alive, and then realizing I found something pretty spectacular here, I was able to find a way to verify that data. And that's one of the things that was pretty exciting to me, is not only could I find out the secret, but I can also get some verification of my own. And so that's one of the interests I have. Maybe I have a personal project, which I believe in. I'll kind of go into that if you want at this time. I have a belief that, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, and maybe this is a little controversial to say, but I have a belief that all diseases on this planet are curable with the technology we have today. Okay, I'm going to make that statement because this is some information that's come across in my lifestyle. I don't care what disease it is, cancer being one of the biggest ones that comes up, that there is techniques, there is, you know, whether it be a spice, an herb, a strategy, whatever, a healing method that can cure all these diseases. Mm-hmm. And as I've grown up over time, you know, I've lost a lot of family and friends that died by traditional medicines. Whether, you know, that basically they went to their doctor when they had got sick, and a few days later, either they were getting chemotherapy or they're dead. Either one, that's what happened to them. So I have a personal project that I picked up along the way, which is to send these cures for cancers and different diseases back in time to people that can make use of them and actually develop them further and bring them into our society. And I don't know if you're familiar with the tech, let's see, it's kind of not really a religion, but to some people it's called Huna. Have you ever heard of Huna? It's the ancient Hawaiian.
Yeah, with the kahunas, yeah.
Yeah, some people call it a religion. Some people just call it a way of life. Well, they have a belief system that you can send information into your past, into your present, into your future. Well, when I was remote viewing, I found that a very similar technique.
Yeah.
And so I developed what I call Project Twin Spin. It's a personal project, which is basically, as I discover each one of these secrets to or one of these cures for a disease, is to send that information back in time to people that could do something with it, with the hope that we'd maybe have these diseases cured before they start affecting people in my life. It's a personal journey. So that's one of a personal interest of mine is how to get information back in time. And
you can project the future self or other dimensional as well.
Well, my belief is if you can send it to your past, it will become your present and your future. So that was, mm-hmm. to me, was more, the farther back in time, the more likely it would be available to us today as well as our future, at least to be farther developed anyway. So, but you're right, you can send it into the future as well if it's something you want to do.
Or connect with your future self.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing is too, is you could connect with your future self and ask yourself, well, what did you think of this and what do you think of that, and was this a smart move or whatever. But so this is a personal project called Project Twin Spin, and I'd like to make a request to your audience that if whatever way they pray that they bless or pray that this is a successful project, and hopefully you'll all benefit, that it pans out for the rest of us. And again, that's a personal belief that and a personal interest of mine that got me also involved in looking for the oldest people alive and learn their secrets to survival and immortality.
On that note too, Ben, with immortality, we had a question in the chat. Are the immortals all slim? Because you talked about the calorie restricted intake.
I wouldn't call them skinny, or, you know, there's a point where slim gets to be looks unhealthy. They are very healthy slim. So let's just say that they, in my opinion, is they were all in pretty good shape. Now, if you take a look at the picture of Lee Ching Young, he doesn't look too good a shape, but that's a pretty old picture of him as well. But the ones that I've made contact or researched, they all appear to be I would say, in very good shape. I wouldn't call them obese in any way, shape, or form, or fat. They were definitely all in good shape, and although they may not be super muscular, I would say they're definitely a good athletic body, at least a good well-toned body.
So had some muscle tone.
Yes.
Yeah. And Queen Goddess is, in the chat is saying success for you with your visions, Ben.
Well, thank you, Queen Goddess. I appreciate that.
Blessings there. That is wonderful. So as we wind out, Ben, what do you think is most important for people to take away with them, you know, in all your research and your study and what you have taken away? What do you think is most important in your message? Because really, what I'm hearing from you, this is really, you're into this about helping to people change their lives. So what do you really want to get across to people?
Well, the main thing today, and this is, I'm trying to project as well in all of my writings and interviews, is a message of hope that we can choose, and we have the right to choose, and the what's necessary to choose our life, the life quality, the length of our lives, the abundance in our lives. I believe it's all connected with our programming and our belief systems. And what I'm delivering here through our conversation today, and in my books, in my current book and my future book, is that we have this innate power that all we have to do is ask for and turn it on and use it. Acknowledge that it exists, turn it on, and if we can't figure out how to make it work, ask those who do how to make it work, and make use of it to bring us the lifestyle that we want to live. We may not have 100% of everything we possibly can imagine, but we're going to get all the abundance that we need if we so choose so. And I've noticed it in my life that when I've gotten over this negative thoughts, negative programming, negative deeds in my life, put them aside and say, I don't need those, I don't want those, they don't need to be part of my evolution and my spiritual evolution. I believe that as I focused on the positive, focused on what I wanted was starting to come into my life. And I don't care how impossible the dream is, how impossible it seems like that hurdle we have to cross, whether it be a disease, whether it be finding the money to pay our bills, if it means that finding that love we've been searching for all our life. I believe all of that is possible if we can just get to the point where we can believe that it's possible, believe that the answers are out there, believe that we have inside of us what we need to make that jump to receiving what we want to receive. And so when I interviewed these gentlemen, they just brought to my attention the incredible abundance that we have just to extend our lives and live as long as we choose to. That was just an immense aha to everything else I've learned from these other lessons that I mentioned earlier about walking barefoot on hot coals and learning how to find the answers of the universe on a piece of paper using a little strange technique developed by a spy agency for our government. As strange as that sounds, that was brought into my life at the right time because I was ready for it, and it brought me the answers I needed to go the next step, to find even more abundance, to find even more information. And, you know, I don't care what it is that you're looking for. It's all a part of abundance that we are entitled to as human beings, I think, as you know, truly as children of God, that we just have to tap into and just be knowledgeable and grateful to receive it, and it'll come to us.
Yeah, part of it is that it is already, it's here. It's tapping into it or finding it, opening to that. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming back on Awakenings and sharing this wonderful insight and awareness of Life of the Immortals. Really appreciate you being on the program.
I had a wonderful time as always. I would love to return again. There's so much to talk about here, but I hope I brought enough today to give everybody that little bit of extra oomph in their life that they can realize that there's a more that they can receive when they're ready for
it. Absolutely.
And take them to the next
level.
Thank you
so much. And just really quickly, because we have just a few seconds, give the best web, because you have a few websites, so give the best website for people to contact you or get in touch with you or read about your work.
BenAbba.com is my main blog, BenAbba. You can leave comments on the blog, and I will get those comments. So that's another way to communicate with me. It also has a summary of the information. It's got little bits of freebie information.
Perfect.
If you go through
Perfect.
The blog, you'll find everything information there.
Good. So BenAbba.com. And again, thank you, Queen Goddess, for calling in. Great that you won that book by BenAbba. And for all of you, until next time, shine your light, share your insight, keep awake. Michelle Mache saying lots of love and light to all of you.